the Christmas parade into the summer, or into, not the summer, into the new year. I thought I would maybe do something a little bit different. I haven't done this before, but I wanted to look at a couple of the Christmas carols. I wanted to look at the story that they tell. Some of our Christmas carols are amazing, aren't they? Some of our Christmas carols are amazing. And I find that music is a really powerful thing, because music really evokes our emotions. It really moves the soul of people at times. And throughout the centuries in the church, music has been used to portray great truths about God. It has been so important to do that, especially in a society down through the years where people couldn't read or write. Music was really used to drum in great truths about God into their hearts and their minds. I think that music actually can shape our society as well. Sometimes it can shape it for the better, and unfortunately, it can also shape it for the worse as well. And I really wanted, over a few weeks at Christmas, just to look at a few carols to try and capture some of the wonder and some of the great depth of theology that's in some of these carols. But also, maybe we might find out some of the errors that are in them. Because with the best will in the world, in some of the carols, I don't think it was actually snowing in Bethlehem at any time. So we might find out some of the errors in them as well. But the carol we're going to look at tonight, I've got about three or four favorite carols. I love Silent Night, not because of the theology, but I just think it's a lovely carol when the lights are turned out to sing Silent Night. I love O Holy Night, just because of the great power that's in the words of it. But this carol that we're going to look at tonight probably comes a very, very close second or third for me. And it's not a carol that we sing that often, but it's probably the most ancient carol that we've got in our carol books. This carol probably goes back to about the 5th or the 6th century. So literally 300 or 400 years after the apostles were about, this carol was being sung. It was probably sung by Benedictine monks as a Gregorian chant at that time. But it was translated from Latin into English in the mid-1800s by an Anglican priest called John Mason Neal. And it was linked to the tune that we know today in 1851 by a man called Thomas Helmore. This carol is an amazing carol. And in the history books, what used to happen with the Benedictine monks is there's 7 verses in it. And 7 days before Christmas, they would start and they would sing the first verse. And they would sing a verse each day to prepare them for Christmas Day. And I'm going to ask Malcolm now if he would sing, because I want home early. No, I'm going to ask Malcolm if Malcolm would play this carol on the harmonica. No, on the screen.
Cause I light on earth. disperse the gloomy clouds of night. In death's dark shadow put to flight. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to
unique as chorals, that choral, isn't it? Most of the chorals we sing at Christmas time are bouncy tunes, bouncing along, and we're singing Joy to the World or Hark the Herald. Lots of exuberance in the songs that we sing, but the song that we've just heard, O Come Emmanuel, brings with it a mood of yearning, a mood of longing, a mood of desperation for something to happen. And it's one of the only chorals that I know of that is not just about Christ's first coming, but it's prophetic speaking into his second coming as well, and the yearning for Christ to return for a second time. It's incredible words to it. That version that we've just watched on the screen has been updated a bit. Some of the wording of it has been changed a bit, modernized. But the roots of that choral are really not just in the New Testament, but go back into the depths of the Old Testament. And you can almost imagine this carol could have been sung by the children of Israel at the shores of the Euphrates and Babylon when they were in captivity. They could have sung this song, oh come, Emmanuel, take us home. Take us home. And there's a real yearning the whole way through this song, an aching in their hearts. And I think the words of it are just beautiful. Both me and Lorna, we quite like CSI. Anybody else like CSI? It's not quite as good as NCIS, that's really good, but CSI is all right because we like a bit of murder mystery. We like a good detective thing where we can use those skills of investigation. And I think we really need to use those skills of investigation a little bit when we come to this carol. If we don't, we sing words that we don't understand. And this carol, as I said earlier on, is really deep in theology, and we need to dig a little bit. Let's look at the very first verse. The very first verse of this carol says, "O come, wisdom, come from on high." I guess if I was to ask you, where is wisdom talked most about in the Bible? I think most people would turn around and say the book of Proverbs. This is what it says in the book of Proverbs. It says, "Wisdom cries aloud in the street, in the marketplaces. She raises her voice." Because wisdom in the book of Proverbs isn't just talking about wisdom. It refers to wisdom as a person. It says, again, in Proverbs 8, verse 12, it says, "I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. I find knowledge and discretion." Wisdom as a person. This verse and these verses are not talking about, "I wish you would be wise." But they're saying, "I wish you would know wisdom as a person." I think what the core of this verse is about, "O come, thou wisdom from on high, and order all things far and nigh. To us the path of knowledge show, and cause us in her ways to go." I think the root of it is that we would know the God of all wisdom, that we would know Jesus himself, that his word would become life to us and meaning to us. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. You know, to the Greek speaking people of the day, that word was the Logos. It was the wisdom of the gods. He was literally saying, the wisdom of the universe has become flesh and dwelt amongst us. And I don't know about you, but I think if there's one thing that our nation needs today is a good dose of wisdom. You know, we have got an election in a few weeks' time. We need wisdom. We need wisdom as the people of God to vote for who God calls us to vote for. We don't need to just fall on political platforms and this is not a political speech tonight, but we need to know the wisdom of God. Because what happens will affect our nation. What happens will affect our nation, maybe for generations, who knows? And we need that wisdom. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 1, verse 20, he says, "Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world?" And that is so relevant today. We need the wise person. We need someone who's got a word from God for our nation. We need someone who knows the heart of God for our nation. Paul says this later on in Corinthians, in verse 24, he says, "Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God." I guess what this carol is asking us to sing, to declare, is that we would know the wisdom of God, and that Jesus would work through us. He would show us his ways. He would show us the ways to go. And that we would see that not just for our church and our lives, but we would see it for our nation. The choral goes on. Verse 2, it says, O come, Adonai, Lord of might. The word Adonai is literally the Hebrew word for Lord or Master. The Lord, a master of the Israelites, who gave the law, who led by the fire and the cloud. This is the God who spoke on Mount Sinai, who spoke to people himself, to Moses, and gave them the very words of God. This verse in this choral, I think, shows us that the God that we worship, the God that we are going to worship this Christmas time, is the eternal one. He is not just the God that we have picked up. He is not just the God of Bethlehem, but this is the God of the Ancient of Days. This is the God who spoke to Moses. This is the God whose history goes right back into eternity and goes forward all the way into eternity as well. He is Lord. He is God. He is above all things. You know, when we worship him tonight, we need to appreciate how great our God is. One John 1. We read this at Christmas. And it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Before anything was, I am. He is the Eternal One. He is the Ancient of Days. He is the Lord of all. Verse 3. And the choral says, O come, thou rod of Jesse, free. You know, the very start of the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 3, we read about the fall of humanity. We read about Adam and Eve and listening to the serpent and eating from the fruit of the tree and disobeying God. And because of that, they fell from all eternity. For all generations after that fell. But there's this verse in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. And I wonder if we were there in those times, if we were there in the generations that came after, I wonder what would be going through our minds when we read this verse. It says in Genesis 3, verse 15, about the serpent, it says, I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring. And he, that's your offspring, will bruise your Satan's head, and you shall bruise his heel. Can you imagine what that would be like for Eve to be told that? That your offspring is going to step on the head of Satan. He's going to crush Satan. Can you imagine what that would be like when she had her first children, when she had Cain and Abel, the expectation that would have been in her heart that one of these guys is going to step in Satan's head and go to crush his head. And then they mess up. They mess up big time. So what happens? Then it goes on down the generations. And is it Noah? Is it Noah's going to be the man that's going to crush Satan's head? No, it's not Noah. Is it going to be Abraham? Is Abraham going to be the one that crushes Satan's head? No, it's not Abraham. And the expectation of the Satan crusher goes on after generation after generation after generation. And ultimately, we read in the Old Testament that the rose of Israel, the person who rises to the top in Israel, is King David, the greatest king that would ever walk the face of Israel. King David, the son of Jesse. Would David be the one? Would he be the one who would finally crush Satan's head and set his people free. You know the story as well as I do, and David messes up. Not only did David mess up, but his son messes up. The kingdom divides, and down through the generations, it almost seems over a few centuries that the line of David that God had promised would last forever, it seems to be that God had had enough of it, and it fizzles out. But then Isaiah says this. In Isaiah 11, verses 1 and 2, he says, "There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse, and a branch from his roots shall bear fruit, and the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord." Incredible, isn't it? From the stump of Jesse. Do you know what a stump is? A stump's when you cut a tree down. A stump is, you know, how many of you have turned around and chopped a tree down and thought, "That's it, it's out of my garden. It'll not come back again." And all of a sudden something grows up the side of it. Sometimes you cut them out and they die. But what Isaiah says is, out of something that looks as if it's dead, there will be a shoot that will come. And this shoot will have the Spirit of God upon him and in him. I think this is such an encouraging verse. Because how many times in life do we feel as if everything's failed? How many times in life do we feel as if it's just rubbish? It's all gone. Our dreams have gone, our hopes have gone. It looks as if disaster has struck. But out of a stump, out of a nothing, God can bring forth life. And out of the stump of Jesse, who defeats Satan on the cross? Who is the resurrection and the life? Jesus, who is of the root of Jesse. Stump of the house of David had lost its glory. It lost its power. It lost its destiny. But God redeems it all. And you know what? It doesn't matter how big a mess your life is. God can redeem it all. He can redeem it all. That's the story of this verse. "Oh, come thou rod of Jesse, free line own from Satan's tyranny, from depths of hell thy people save, and give them victory over the grave." He can change it all. And he does change it all. Verse, whatever it is. "Oh, come, save the way that leads on high, and clothe the path to misery." Isaiah 22 and verse 22. I guess when I say that word "key," that it maybe conjures up certain images in your mind of maybe things that are said in the scriptures. But this is what it says in Isaiah 22, verse 22. And it says, "And I will place on his shoulders the key of the house of David, and he shall open and none shall shut, and he shall shut and none shall open." What a prophetic statement about Jesus, the coming Messiah, that anything that he opens will open and anything that he shuts will shut, because he has got the key. He's got the authority. And this was fulfilled in Jesus Christ. But this is what John says in Revelation chapter 3 and verse 7. He says, "To the angel of the church in Philippi write these, the words of the Holy One, the true One, who is the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, and who shuts and no one will open." Isn't that amazing? Do you know why it's really amazing? Because that hasn't truly happened yet. But there will be a day come when at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. And whatever he says will happen, and whatever he says will go, and everyone will submit to it. He will have total authority and total reign. This carol shows us that Jesus has the keys. He is the keys to life and the keys to death. He is the keys to get into the presence of God. And I have to tell you tonight, I'm very backward in my theology or very old-fashioned in my theology, but I still believe that Jesus is the only way, the only truth, and the only life. The only way to the Father is through him. He is literally the waymaker. He is the waymaker. Where there is no way, he can make a way. He holds the keys. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. He opens up the path to life, and he closes the path to misery as well. I love that. He closes the path to misery. We don't have to be miserable. Sometimes I like being miserable. Anybody else like being miserable? I like being miserable on a Monday morning. But he closes the path to misery because he has come to set us free. Come, thou day spring from on high, and cheer us by thy drawing nigh. Disperse the gloomy clouds of night and death's dark shadows put to flight. Rob and Alex will be really pleased about this, because to get the actual wording of Dayspring, I had to go back to the King James Version. But it's a new King James Version, so you'll not be that happy. This is what it says in Luke chapter 1, verses 78 and 79, because that word Dayspring is a strange word to us. And it says, through the tender mercy of our God, with which the Dayspring from on high has visited us, to give light to those who sit in darkness and the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. Those were the words that Zechariah wrote. Zechariah, who was the husband of Elizabeth, who would give birth to John the Baptist. And what Zechariah was praying and was singing really in that chapter was, he was singing about his son that was being born and the gift of his son. But then he goes on to say that his son was the forerunner for someone else. He was coming, who was greater. And this person who was greater than John the Baptist was the Dayspring. The Dayspring. Have you ever been up early in the morning, Alex? Have you ever been up early in the morning and watched out? You know, I'll tell you where's a beautiful place, Silverdale Country Park. First thing in the morning, I love it, going out there with the dog, you know, first thing in the morning, up at the very top of the hill, and just to see the sunrise. Because have you ever noticed what happens when the sun rises? Because just before the sun rises, it seems to get darker than it's ever got. And then all of a sudden, you will see a little bit of a pinprick, and maybe a little light shaft. And then the shaft intensifies and intensifies until the light has completely overwhelmed the darkness. Jesus is the Dayspring. He is the new risen morning. Whatever your situation is, whatever the darkness is, he can bring light into it. He can bring hope. He can bring peace. He can bring joy into it. John says in John chapter 1, verses 4 and 5, he says, in him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. He shines, and he shines brightly. You may have noticed that my wife has just sneaked in the back. She's been away this weekend. And she's been away shopping. I had to hide the credit card. She told me on Friday night, she says, Friday night. No, when did you go Friday night? Wasn't it? Saturday. She told me on Friday night, she says, I have to be up at 5 on Saturday morning. Have you ever had that when you know you need to be up at a certain time? You ever had that? You know you need to be up. Well, when I know I need to be up at a certain time, what happens is that I wake up every single hour the whole way through the night to check it's not that time yet. And the crazy thing was for us on Friday night was that we woke up every hour until about 3 o'clock in the morning. Then we fell asleep and we woke up at 20 past 6. So it was a mad panic to get out the door. It seemed to us on Friday night as if the night would never end. It just seemed to go on and on and on forever. You know, I know some people, and that's the way their life has been. I know some people who, in the midst of grief and bereavement, in the midst of sickness, in the midst of family problems, it just seems as if their darkness will never end. Today, I had to go up to Nutton today, to our congregation up in Nutton, and I was just speaking to a lady up there. She's got a son, he's got autism. He's about 8 or 9. And it just seems at times as if he's out of control. And we were just talking to her about different things. And I said to her, I says, how are you? How are you? She just broke down in tears in front of me. Because her darkness, it just doesn't seem as if there's any light in the middle of it. When you've got a child that can be violent at times, so hard to deal with. So hard to deal with. But that's why this carol brings us hope. Because although darkness may endure for a night, joy comes in the morning. He is the day spring who from on high will shine his light upon us. He will disperse the gloomy clouds of night. And he will put death's dark shadows to flight. We need to pray, God, shine your light. Shine your light. Well, come, desire of nations, bind all peoples in one heart and mind. Bid envy, strife, and quarrel cease. Fill the whole world with heaven's peace. You know, the original word in the Latin when this song was originally written, the original word was, O come, King of the Gentiles. But unfortunately, that didn't rhyme very well, so they had to change it to Desire of Nations. The time of Jesus and before it, for someone who was not a Jew, there was no hope. The gods of the non-Jews weren't interested in people. Their job, the people's job, was to try and appease the gods, just keep them happy. It wasn't to ask them or to expect it, to get anything from them. If we can just keep them happy, that's all we can do. And there was no hope for them from the Jewish people because the Jewish people thought Jehovah was their God and no one else's gods. Even though the prophets had said that he was a light for the world. John says this in 1 John 11 and 12. He says he came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become the children of God, to those who believe in his name. This verse is an incredible verse for us because if he had not come as the King of the Gentiles, none of us would be here tonight. None of us would be here. But he opened up his grace to include all nations. And this carol is such a prophetic carol because this yearning that's expressed in this verse is not just a yearning for what was going to happen when Jesus came the first time. When Jesus came the first time, was the whole earth filled with heaven's peace? That's something of an age still to come. The age that the Bible says when the lion will lie down with the lamb, when peace will be on this planet, and we need peace. We need peace. It's a yearning prophetically for what is still to come. This is what it says in Revelation 7, verses 9 and 10. It says, after these things I looked, and behold, a great multitude with no one could number of all nations, tribes, and peoples, and tongues, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palm branches in their hands. And they cried out in a loud voice, saying, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. There will come a day when we will all stand before God, every nation, every tribe, every tongue, the good looking like me and the bad looking like the rest of you, we'll all be there. We will worship him. We will give him glory and praise. The last verse of this carol is actually what we sing as the first verse, and it's probably the verse that most people know. But this verse says, O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God appears. And you can just imagine, as someone sings this verse, you can imagine an Israelite in captivity and slavery singing those words, O come, Emmanuel, come, God, come and be with us. But as the children of Israel could sing that, we can sing it as well, because we are strangers and we are aliens in this world. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. It's not where we belong. And that's why at times we watch the news and our heart breaks and we're confused, because this is not where we're meant to live. And we cry out, O come, come, Emmanuel. It's a real sense that this is a cry of a Christian. Because we have been liberated if we have given our life to Jesus. But the reality is for each one of us that even though we have given our life to Jesus, we are not fully living in his presence, are we? There's a reality for each one of us, even though we've given our life to Jesus, we're not fully living in victory, are we? There's a reality for each one of us, even though we have given our life to Jesus, we're not living in full freedom the way he's promised. And we will not do that until he calls us home. So we see him face to face. Oh come, Emmanuel. There's a real sense in which we have been redeemed, but we're not yet fully redeemed until he returns. Jesus is the wisdom of God. Jesus is Lord. Jesus is the eternal one. Jesus is the light of the world. Jesus is the key into the presence of God. Jesus is the hope of the world. Jesus is the presence of God. So what's the response? After every verse we sing, rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel, God with us, shall come to thee, O Israel. And not just Israel, but he will come to us. Rejoice, rejoice. These lyrics of this song are not just celebrating the birth of a Savior, but they're preparing our hearts and hopefully building some excitement up within us for Jesus' ultimate return, when all things will be made new. So in a sense, each verse is helping us place our eyes on Christ's return by remembering his first coming, and also by helping us anticipate, yearn, hope, and ache for his second coming. But there's one last thing that I want to share with you. I think this is a little bit amazing. I'm not that educated. Anybody do Latin at school? Did anybody do Latin? No? Oh, somebody's put their hand up. I thought I could just say whatever I wanted then and none of you would know any different, but these are the Latin words. O Sapanita, O Adonai, O Radex Jesse, O Clavis Davis, O Arias, O Rex Gentilum, O Emmanuel. Those are the Latin words for each verse which would have originally been written in. If you take the first letter after the word O, if you take the first letter of each word, starting at Septenia, Adonai, Radex, and go the whole way down, if you take the first letter, you take it down the way and write a word out of it, it's a word called Sakor. And it means absolutely nothing. But if you read it up the way, it's a word called Aerocras. And Aerocras means, I shall be with you tomorrow. Wow. Wow. Oh come, Emmanuel. We're going to come around the table of the Lord tonight. I'm going to ask the worship team to come up.